But if everybody in here could give their attention to Dwayne Bradley, we'd appreciate it. Thanks. Dwayne, it's your show.
Okay, first thing I want to do, I'm on the agenda for 40 minutes, and I'm perfectly happy to give at least 10 back to the board. Because I think that some of the energy behind the decision to make KPFT a focus station on the agenda for this meeting may have dissipated. That being said, I have a short presentation that was put together by myself and the KPFT program director, Ernesto Aguilar, and some kids from our summer youth intern program had a little 2-minute flash movie that I want to show to everybody. First, before asking to have the lights dimmed, I would like to thank my friends here in New York for hosting another Pacifica National Board meeting and letting me come at least back to be close to where I grew up. And I want to thank Indra and Bernard. I don't know how often they both get thanked, but I'm going to thank them both. And also the local station board and all of y'all for helping make us feel as welcome as we do. So I'm going to start this little show. It's going to take just a little while, and we'll try and save as much time as we can. No.
Preset 2 would work fine.
How about some audio?
Summer. I didn't really know anything about 90.1 until I started volunteering here, and that's when I found out that this place was something special.
I think that KPFT is important because it's different from anything out there.
Well, KPFT, to me, KPFT is the voice of the people.
I moved to Houston probably like 9 years ago, and it took me a long time to adapt to the city, especially talking when I listen to the radio, but when I found KPFT, it made me feel at home.
My name is Alex. The reason KPFT is so important is because without KPFT, we wouldn't have Generation Radio and you guys wouldn't be able to listen to Bangla.
KPFT really represents the diversity of Houston because so many community members have their own shows and are able to call in and voice their opinions through this station.
KPFT is about empowerment and community building, and that's freaking powerful, and I want to be a part of that.
It's neat being a member of it, where you get a voice. I mean, you email people here, you call them, and there's actually somebody on the other side that cares what you have to say, that cares about your opinion. I mean, these programs are on the air because of our listeners and the feedback that we get, and it's just an empowering feeling, and people need to get out there and become a part of something that's so unique and so special in Houston.
Hi, I'm Luke Jones from KPFT. While I was volunteering here, I really came to understand why KPFT was important to me. It taught me so many new things, and it prepared me for the career I plan to do in later life. No other radio station would do that. No other TV station would do that. I really feel the station's unique, and I don't think I could have gotten the experience I got here anywhere else.
It's news and information and music that's unadulterated by corporate interests, and that's a vital component in any democracy.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth. من غير العدالة مش ممكن نجد السلام.
Okay, that lights can come back up a little bit, I hope, from that. That was something that was thrown together since I left Houston Wednesday morning by some kids who are doing a 10-week program at the station as part of our youth outreach. And I just thought y'all needed to see that. So I'm going to run through a couple of things that, I know y'all love the PowerPoints, So I'm going to share that with you. So KPFT, I like to think of it not as a balkanized thing where every little niche community gets like, okay, there's the this one, that color, that flavor, you know, and all that. I think of it as a quilt, and we weave something together at KPFT. So we made program changes in April. Some of them that I think are noteworthy are that we moved this Arab Voices program that's been a very, very special show that reaches a great audience but was on late in the evening, and it still reached a great audience, but now it's been moved into primetime 7 p.m. on the same night that it's been on, and it now comes on right after our rebroadcast of Democracy Now! In the evenings, and has reached even more people. The hosts knew that they were going to get more people listening, but even they are sort of stunned by how many people call into the show and how the phone lines rarely are empty. The Haiti show had been one of those kind of niche programs that was on actually at 4:30 in the morning on a Sunday, I think, and is now on a Sunday evening in a far better slot, and it's a bilingual program that's done for the Haitian community in Houston. Interchange is a really great new program that we're all proud of. 10 years ago, the host of this program, who is the head of Habitat for Humanity in the southeast Texas area, did this program, and he brings a really wonderful group of connections to the community, because this guy is plugged into a lot of well-intended social service organizations and political people, and he brings them into the station, and it's a real great addition to our airwaves. Peaceful Coexistence is another new show that I thought I'd just briefly mention to y'all, which is a collaborative work that one of the outshoots of our Open Journal program. Now, this is something that I've discovered is unique to KPFT, and most of the board members know this, and maybe y'all listening do too, but at noon on weekdays, we have a program called Open Journal, and it's nobody's show, and it's everybody's show. And any member of KPFT can apply to do a program in that slot. It gives us a lot of flexibility to try out new ideas. This program, Peaceful Coexistence, was a one-shot Open Journal program a year ago in April. It was put together by a woman who works for the Mayor of Houston's Citizens with Disabilities Outreach Office and a group out of the Rice University Bonyok Center for Understanding and the Holocaust Museum staff in Houston. And the vibe from that show, the feedback from that show, was just so overwhelmingly positive, and it was such there was such a spirit of mission truth to that program that we spent from last April until this April working on with our program council and working within some structure at KPFT to make sure that when we made some program changes that this program would be there. And we also brought, and this was actually news to me when I got the new name of it, we have on Saturday nights as part of our youth outreach program, we have a new 30-minute program which we let them name themselves, and they call themselves Whippersnapper Radio. So it's a relatively new program, and it's a way of bringing kids who are working during the week as unpaid staff, who are some of them are interning, and some of them who come in and actually work live with our Saturday night host. Our Disability Access This program, or as our host likes to say, Access This show, was granted a Barbara Jordan Media Award, the only award that was given to any radio program or station last month up in Dallas. And we had a really nice cover feature story that was focused. One of the slides that was part of that presentation showed Obadike Kamau. Those of you on the board remember Ngozi, his wife. And Obadike was in one of those slides there. And there was a very lengthy, with a great picture of him on the top of the front page profile on black talk shows, mainly featuring Obadike's program, Self-Determination Radio. And we're also conducting some advanced programming skills enhancement workshops this summer. One of the things we've discovered is that in addition to regular evaluation and feedback, that people who volunteer, who are paid, people who, anyone associated with the station, whether they're paid or unpaid, if they're giving their heart and soul to KPFT, to Pacifica, we, as a former, you know, unpaid staff, as a volunteer programmer for over 10 years, crave critical feedback and an opportunity to enhance our skill sets. And we're working on that this summer as well. The program council I mentioned. Some stations have program council, some don't. Dr. Bethune is actually the chair of KPFT's program council. And this is something that we had a program council committee that was a collaborative work between management and the board. There was a program council committee that worked for quite a few months as we hashed out essentially a contract between the board and management on what this would be, how it would be composed, what would be its focus. And they've been together for a little over a year. And it's a tripartite group that works with the program director. There are 13 members, counting the PD. There are four members of the board drawn out and elected from the board by the board. There are four members from the staff that are chosen by the staff. That's unpaid and paid staff. And there are four members of the community at large. Any member of KPFT can submit their name, can come and talk to the board, and could potentially be one of those four that are chosen. So the program council is something that was written up as an attempt at collaboration, as, you know, working together, board and staff, and I think it's been, on the whole, a successful endeavor. It's something that we're working on an extension to this agreement that actually expired recently. So some of the programming agenda focus points for us in Houston are, as part of our schedule change that we worked many, many months starting last summer on redefining our grid with the program council, we unveiled a new schedule with some changes in April. And in that schedule, there is a slot that's there, already marked for Spanish language news in the evenings on KPFT. So we were anticipating that it would actually be ready like when we leave here, but we'll hold the slot for another month. Another important priority for us is to approve a new program council agreement, because the original agreement was signed as a one-year contract between management and the board. The board chair and myself signed this contract creating the program council. That was November 10th of 2004. We've been extending the life of the program council kind of on a month-to-month basis since November of 2005 as we rework some of the parts of the agreement that we've found to be a little unwieldy or things that we wanted to put a different focus on, like a sense that the program council came up with by itself, that consensus decision-making rather than majority bludgeons minority was a good way to go. And that's part of reshaping our programming strategy. As I mentioned earlier, focusing on program evaluation and programmer feedback and enhancement, that's something that people crave. That's something that, because of the pressures that were on the program council in its first incarnation, that they were not able to concentrate on as much as they were on program grid and schedules and things. And we're also working on contracts for all of our volunteer staff. The programmers will be asked to sign contracts to help us experience this sense that the time is owned by the community. The time is not owned by a programmer. We've all heard the Pacifica legend of someone willing a program slot to, I don't know, their roommate or their dog or something like that. Community relations, I wanted to just share this interesting quote, and feel free to disagree with it because it's not from me. Rice University sociology professor Stephen Kleinberg has been doing the Houston area survey every fall for 25 years. I've watched Houston change. I've lived there for 35 years. And he said this, not me. Houston today, but I will say it, Houston today is what America will look like in 40 years. And the reason he said that is simply this. There is no majority in Houston anymore. Houston today is 35% white, 35% brown, 20% black, and 10% Asian. It's a mix that exists in various different proportions in various different metropolitan areas from coast to coast. But if we continue evolving and don't self-destruct as a society, in 40, maybe 50 years, most of the country will look more or less like Houston does today. You can go to San Francisco and find a much higher Asian population than the numbers I just shared. You can go to Los Angeles and find a much higher Latino population than the number I shared. I don't know what the exact demographic split is here, but I don't know. I kind of feel good knowing that the future exists in Houston today. So some of our outreach events, some of our community events that we've participated in recently, the Art Car Parade. I don't know if anyone's ever been to an Art Car Parade or seen an art car, but it's an amazing thing. And if you don't know what it is, look it up online. You can see pictures of it. Or maybe come to Houston next spring and see it. 200,000 people out on the street watching hundreds of interesting art objects rolling down the street, including the KPFT station wagon. I should have a picture of it. We melted part of our record library onto an old 1987 Buick Century station wagon and had a DJ on the roof. The Cinco de Mayo Parade, Cesar Chavez Parade, the International Festival. The Houston International Festival is kind of like the New Orleans Jazz Heritage Festival. Brings hundreds of thousands of people into downtown Houston. This year the focus was Jamaica. We were the hosts of the World Music Stage and interacted with lots and lots of people. It was an amazing place to be for two weekends at the end of April, the beginning of May. And the Beats of Basquiat is an interesting thing that we affiliated with the Houston Museum of Fine Arts. And the Basquiat exhibit ran for a period of time. And every 6 weeks, they would bring in DJs from around the country and local ones and have the museum open until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night. And I've never seen 7,000 people jammed into the main room at the MFA in Houston before, and all of them were half my age. And I think that outreach to a youth-based community, several of the DJs were members of KPFT programs, and so that relationship that we had with the arts community in Houston was quite a wonderful experience for all of us. Well, I have 40 minutes, Dave. just blasting through this. Okay, the immigration rally programming, we went live to the immigration rallies in Houston recently. You can read the rest of this. Ernesto will be facilitating a People of Color and Community radio session at the GRC in Madison later this summer. People were mentioning KSAP LP in Port Arthur, Texas. Donnell, the general manager, and Ernesto and myself and Ebon from Radio Free Georgia, our missing national board member, met up in Portland, Oregon at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters Conference, discussing kind of a southern strategy for Pacifica, for community radio, because that's there's definite gaps there. If you're talking an LP FM 90 miles east of Houston, and then you're not really talking about much until Atlanta, there's an awful lot of people and territory there not being served. You saw some of the kids. They helped produce this nice little movie you saw earlier. This is just a little slide about our New Voices program, which is an evening program. Our youth program is a summer program. As I said, it's two five-week sessions, and about a dozen folks each session are participating in that. We're also doing some work with some of the local high schools, as you see in here. Coming up later this summer, we have a really good outdoor concert series at the Miller Outdoor Theater that we got a grant from the City of Houston to put together, a six-week Sunday afternoon series. Our community advisory board has actually met. We put together a concert series for the city with a grant that we applied for from the city. Staff, okay, we'll blast through this. Okay, all this is in my report for the most part, and it's printed, and I think it may even be posted on our website, but it's in all of y'all's packets. If you've ever been to Houston, you know what I mean when I talk about physical plant improvements. We're always striving to make the little house to make the little house a little bit better. And, you know, like it or not, I'm one of those people who takes Arbitron information with not a grain of salt but a block of salt, because it's a metric, but it's just a metric. It's not the metric. But we were rated as the only climbing station of the five Pacifica stations, so I just thought that was worth noting. It's not something to hang a banner, you know, from the Empire State Building on, but, you know. Technology issues are a big thing. We received a construction permit from the FCC last September to raise our power from its current 28,000 back to its original licensed 100,000 watts. We don't have the equipment to do that. That's an unbudgeted expense. Anybody, y'all on the board know what I'm talking about, and I'd be more than happy to field a question. I could spend 40 minutes just talking about that one thing. Our recent fund drive fell a little bit short, 92% of the budget goal. We ended up over $290,000. Our budget goal that was built into the budget y'all passed last year was $315,000. And what that means is that we will have another summer sizzler. And I think this is the final slide. Some of our strengths is, you know, overall we're in fairly solid shape financially. Our upgrade from the FCC is a real opportunity. We have the potential, bringing a new transmitter online, of reaching as many as 300,000 people who right now can't even hear our radio station if they knew about it and cared to try and find it. Our commitment to youth and to new voices on the air and diversity is real. And I already mentioned Arbitron. Ramping up for the Pacifica elections, expensive, awkward, painful, and necessary. We're ramping up for it. Part of the problem is dealing with documentation of hours worked by staff to qualify the difference between listener and staff portions in the election process. And that's more or less it. So I'll go from there. Thank you.
Okay, as far as I know, we have about 12 minutes for questions. Questions? Sandy. And then I see Sarb and Ray.
Recently
Wait,
we approved... Recently, this board approved, our local station board approved, a block of money for a transmitter. Perhaps you'd like to discuss a little bit about what we're looking at in terms of capability, especially with respect to digital.
Okay. I'll try and not spend all 12 minutes answering this question, though I could.
Thank you.
I'm real excited. We did work with Don Mussel, and he's the Pacifica consulting engineer, as I think you all know. We found that we could buy the transmitter equipment necessary to go to the 100,000 watts for about $55,000, maybe another $5,000 for installation costs, so a total cost of about $60,000. But the box itself is about $55,000, and the company that will build it needs 6 to 8 weeks to put it into its assembly line and build the box, and they want 50% down. Hence the reason behind us asking for $27,500 of our cash reserve to be allowed to sort of float to ourselves from ourselves, with an understanding that we would do a major donor campaign quietly through the summer to put the money back in so that at the end of the fiscal year we would net out with that required cash reserve still in the bank and realize a new 100,000 watt transmitter over the course of the summer. Concurrently, I'd been talking to the folks at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. A former colleague of ours, Brian Gibbons from WPFW, is now working as the digital radio guy at CPB, and he would love to help us take advantage of a $75,000 grant that they offered us last year, exactly 1 week before we got permission from the FCC to upgrade our signal strength. I just got word from him yesterday that this not really complicated deal, but an interesting deal. The $75,000 from them was contingent upon $55,000 in local matching funds for digital conversion. I told them if I had $55,000 that I'd buy an analog transmitter with it, nothing digital, because I want to upgrade our signal. So it was kind of a non-starter. I'd left the money on the table and was prepared to let it disappear on May 31st when this contract expired. The bottom line of these discussions that Don Mussel, Brian Gibbons, our chief engineer Steve Brightwell, and I have been having over the last 10 days, including weekends, has been that I was able to get a thumbs up from the CPB. I presented to them a proposal saying, how can we upgrade to digital until we have already realized our full legal authorization to be at 100,000 watts from the FCC? We got that permission a week after you gave us this digital money. Let us use our $55,000 in matching digital money to upgrade our analog signal, because we can't maximize the HD digital until we're at 100,000 watts anyway. They bought that idea, and they're going to let us use the $55,000 we wanted to buy the 100,000 watt transmitter analog anyway. They're going to let that be the matching money that was required to take advantage of the $75,000 sitting out there. Bottom line is, what it means is that hopefully by the end of the summer, KPFT will not only be at 100,000 watts analog, but we will also be 1,000 watts digital, and we'll have accomplished both of them simultaneously. And it's a great thing.
Very good.
Who was next?
Next is Sarv.
Okay,
did I see Ray?
Yeah.
And then Evelyn.
Well, thank you for an excellent presentation. I want to know a little bit about the dynamics in terms of outreach and programming. You told us that about 69%, I believe, of Houston is non-white. However, until 2 weeks ago, we had 4 white representatives on the national board.
Mm-hmm.
What are the issues operating there in terms of outreaching to the community, programming to other groups that would explain such a lopsided result?
Yeah. Well, I think part of that is an evolutionary process. I think part of it is the fact that we are in the process of changing. We're not there yet. It's obvious. Our first election, we had, of the 24 members elected, 5 were people of color. So that's 20% in a city that is only more than 3 times that people of color. So there has been a disconnect long preceding my arrival back at KPFT 4 years ago between communities of color and KPFT. Those of us with elephant memories know that in the mid-90s, KPFT fired all people of color, all ethnic programming, and all foreign language broadcasting on KPFT ceased. If you look at KPFT today, you'll see that I don't like doing any kind of quota-ized kind of breakout of pie diagrams on programming, and yet I'm about to tell you something that sounds like that. There is about 20% of our programming that is by and or for the black community. There's a much smaller than the 10% you would hope to if you were wanting to divide it up equally for the Asian community. And by far the community of color that suffers in Houston the most is the Latino community. 35% of the population, roughly, and KPFT, if you want to really look at it, is about 12% of our programming is really geared to that community. And I'm not overgeneralizing, but I think that there's an awful lot of outreach. There's also a lot of bridges that need to be rebuilt, and a willingness on our KPFT community to keep crossing the road to invite other communities back in. Because it's I think human nature that if your community has been burned, you're going to feel less willing to entertain that opportunity to be burned again. And I know from personal experience that that's the way it was with the black community in Houston. I know other community groups who have been similarly mistreated by Pacifica policy and practice in Houston in the mid to late 90s. And I wish that we were further along, 4.5 years now into my tenure coming back. But I think we've accomplished an awful lot. And I know, more than that, that we have to accomplish a lot more.
Evelyn?
I hope that answers it. Welcome to New York, Evelyn.
Yeah, it's good to be here. And that says a lot for the ability of our board to try to move forward. KPFT has got a long way to go, but they are trying aggressively to make those changes. Part of the issue is the mindset, and people have to be willing to change. I'm the chairperson for the program council, and we decided not to use Robert's rules because of what we saw happening. I said it and I meant it, and what we found was we got a lot more done, and we decided early on to work through consensus. And sometimes it requires a long dialogue, but the end product is that we have a group of people who work extremely hard to make it work, and they have respect for each other. We are hoping that a great deal of that will transmit and carry over to the LSB process. And I see a change in our LSB from when I first got there. It is not an easy process. It's just like trying to move through the civil rights issue. You can change the laws. You can make it now legal for me to get an education. You can do all of that. But you can't change the heart and the mindset of people. Only people can do that. You have to decide that you want it to be different and then do something. And that's what has to happen in order for us to outreach. We have to come out of the station. We have to go out into the community. And we have to talk to people. And we have to make people a priority. Process is good, but if you lose the greatest resource, which is our people, the rest of it doesn't matter. And what I see happening sometimes is we get caught up in the process and we forget about the people. The whole purpose of what we do is for the people. And what I see happening at KPFT is a move back towards an understanding that people are the greatest resource. Our youth program and the push to be more diverse is a very hard, it's a struggle, but it's worth it. So, you know, my hope is that Dwayne will continue to do what he's doing and the LSB will open up and continue to push through to make the hard decisions with people in mind, not just process. Because as important as it is, if we lose the people, it doesn't matter that we have great process and that we all know what's on page 420 of Robert's Rules. So, you know, I want to just let people know that we don't have, KPFT does not have it all together, but we are working very hard to make a difference. That's how I got here. Because the vote to bring me here was not an easy vote for the LSB. And a year ago, it wasn't a vote that they would have made, just based on the consciousness. Hopefully, I've had an integral part in helping to raise that consciousness. And we'll just continue to try to do better. That's all you can ask, is to try to do better every day. And, you know, so a lot of the stuff that we're fighting against, we have to stop fighting each other because we're not the problem. And if we continue to battle and fight each other, we're going to lose. We cannot win by fighting each other. Cannot do it because we are not the enemy.
Thanks.
Dwayne, I had one quick comment. You mentioned a contract you're signing with programmers. I hope you check with the contract policy. I'm not sure if it contains anything in it that would call for a review by your LSB, but if it does, then it should go through that before it's implemented.
Right. We're running it through the LSB. We're running it through the HR office at and legal at National as well.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Dave,
yeah.
Could I have a quick point of personal privilege?
Go ahead.
As some of you know, I taught U.S. history for 35 years, and I've already mentioned to Evelyn Bethune that I taught the history of her grandmother for 35 years, and I want to say it's a great honor to serve on the board with you, and I've really enjoyed enormously getting to know you and so on. And your last name rings in my memory as a U.S. history teacher. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.